What is up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Go Long Show at golongtd.com, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen. We greatly appreciate it. Here in the podcast world, always fueled by our good friends at Fatty Beer Company, which we just BS'd for a while before hitting record. What we should have touched on, Jim, is when we're going to do this pre-draft extravaganza, because it has to happen. We're going to do it at one of the fatty establishments, thinking possibly the weekend before the draft. Find a day that can maybe work for everybody to come on out, drink a beer with us, talk Bills, Packers, hell, Giants, anything, any team. We cover the game through a long form lens, always try to take you behind that curtain. And Jim, well, first of all, how are you on this glorious Western New York day? You're looking spry. You look like you just had a nice tan yourself. I was the one on vacation, and I'm as pale as can be here. But what's new in your world,
Tyler? What's happening? You inspired me. You inspired me this week. We had this. We don't like to talk weather, but you inspired me with your trip to the South. And today we are fortunate in Buffalo to have a day. So yes, I was able to get outside, put me in a little southern mood. We have South Carolina women's hoops coming on, national championship. So I'm kind of Dawn Staley fan. So definitely want to check that out.
It's going to be interesting. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. That actually starts here in 10 minutes as we record here on a Sunday. But yes, was down Holden Beach, North Carolina. Very family friendly spot. Anybody out there who has little kids, can't recommend it enough. It was a fantastic getaway. Of course, you know, the trade of the spring goes down when we're in North Carolina. So I tried to hit pause on the fun and write about that. But yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what people say to this, though. Like, when you have small kids, how do you travel? Because what we've been doing is driving through the night, right? Just kids are asleep most of the drive, pound the coffee. You know, I got the Sheets card and was just loading up Excel every 2-3 hours to the point where you're just wired and you're ready to collapse the next day, but you've got to just power through. But going down, Jim, I think it was like 17 hours of total travel time with delays and kid stops and getting tied. We never get tied around. We got tied around and ended up on 95, which we didn't want to do, you know, through a rainstorm, semis to the left, semis to the right, in the front, in the back. That was a white knuckling 10-2 cross country. Not cross country. You're going south. But then on the way back, we did it the right way. You go across North Carolina and then straight up through the Virginia, through the entire state of West Virginia, Pittsburgh to Buffalo to the 90, all that good stuff. That's the route we like to take. You kind of avoid 95. But that I'm rambling on and on because I had to type out this, Jim. Like, I think our tax dollars need to be spent in a much smarter way than this. All right. So I think it was the state of Virginia. I can't remember. But all of a sudden, we're seeing these signs. It's like midnight, 1 a.m., kids asleep, wife's asleep in the passenger seat, getting all the signs that say, don't text and drive. Good, right? I'm cool with tax dollars going toward that. And then the next line was autocorrect yourself. So trying to get a little clever, I suppose, like autocorrect yourself, be hip. I don't know. I'm looking at these. There's probably 4 or 5 of them. And then all of a sudden, there's a construction zone coming up. You know, nobody working at the construction site in the middle of the night here. But you get the warnings, and the warnings lasted for a mile, mile and a half, 2 miles. And I get over to the left lane. They're directing traffic to the left lane. But then we've got a loafer in the right lane, completely oblivious, clearly texting, clearly distracted. No clue that we've got to get over to that left lane. And I'm chilling in the left lane behind this person. Plenty of space. It's dark, but I'm still trying to wave her in. And wouldn't you know, Jim, I didn't pass because, you know, the second you pass, that's when you're going to run into this jam situation with the construction. Yet she waited to the absolute last second. There it was. So I had to lay on the horn, you know, near accident in the middle of the night. So my point being, we don't need hip little slogans like autocorrect yourself. We need don't text and drive. You're going to effing kill somebody. You know, something punchy, something that hits people between the eyes. We're paying for it, right? It's our money going towards signs like these. So let's quit being cute. Let's quit being soft and trying to be like, no, don't text while you're driving. You're going to effing kill somebody. Because it's a different ball game when you got kids in the backseat. Man, was I pissed. I was like, you know what? I hope we get off on the same rest stop. You know, the road rage kicks in. But yeah. Not good. Not good. I don't know. Am I being too harsh? I think we need to get a little harsher with our public service announcement signs on the highway.
So let's talk about your traffic pattern. Because, you know, I'm experienced Buffalo to Charleston, South Carolina. I've made it more times than you would believe. So you did go the correct way coming home, for sure.
Yes, yes. You got to loop around.
It's a little, you know, definitely not easy with the mountains, but okay.
It keeps you alert. I'll say that. No, I kind of like the West Virginia drive.
It's hard to just, yeah. It is. It's hard to just let go. And then the other thing you're talking about, you could have stopped that story basically with toddlers in the car. There was nothing going to be easy no matter what. So, of course, you're going to get a messed up driver. But even if you didn't, the trip wasn't going to be easy.
Yeah.
But it doesn't help, to your point, if you feel like you're putting your family in danger. Now that's where you got it. I get it.
I love the all-night drive myself, Jim.
No, I'm with you on that. I think that was...
You're alone with your thoughts. Yeah.
I like
that. Catch up on a pod or two. Now, on the way down, it was all rain and all insane traffic because we're on the 95 getting tied around.
We literally have had that. I know we're doing too much weather, but it has been raining, I feel like, for about a week and a half straight.
Well, let's get to the absolute bombshell that dropped in between. We've talked about it. You know, we had the happy hour, I believe, ahead of the de facto AFC East championship game. Buffalo, Miami, the division on the line. There have been whispers, grumblings, and not even rumor, what we see with our own eyes before us, signs that Stephon Diggs is unhappy. I wrote it in the three-part series back in December that him and Sean McDermott are not aligned, do not see eye to eye. We can get into that quote later. But it wasn't just our story. I mean, there's been a lot out there that something is amiss. But of course, you know, you've got the very vocal contingent of fans and fan podcasts that will become an echo chamber of, you don't know what the hell you're... I mean, we caught hell for that happy hour just by pointing out, like, is he getting close to his boiling point here? He's not very happy. He's not really part of the offense. But yeah, I mean, it's because it's easy. It's pandering. It's what you see all the time on Twitter/X. And then when Stephon Diggs does talk, he kind of downplays it and says, hey, yeah, everything's good. Nothing to see here. Then we get to the offseason, even through his media tour, Jim, you know, which he's doing a paid media tour like all of these athletes do. You're shilling for a product. And of course, he's going to be asked about his future in Buffalo, the state of affairs. And he was cryptic. He was open-ended. He said he didn't know what was going to happen. It reminded me a lot of Aaron Rodgers after they lost to Tampa Bay in the NFC Championship game, immediately in that case, in that press conference saying, you know, I don't know what the future is going to hold. In both cases, both players are under contract, under very healthy contracts. And when you hear that, you know, maybe everybody's antenna should have gone up like, whoa, okay. You know, in the Rodgers case, he held the Packers hostage all offseason. In this case, Stephon Diggs wanted out. He wanted out. And Brandon Bean was asked that at the press conference after the fact. Did Stephon Diggs ask for a trade? And he essentially said yes. He danced around it and avoided the question. Betsy, I mean, honestly, part of me felt bad for Brandon Bean up there. It's a tough spot to be in when we only know so much and who knows everything that went into this decision. And there's a lot. We're going to get into everything on this podcast. I say all that, Jim, to say I'm still surprised. I thought that by April, and I wrote this in the series, smash the window, like that cooler heads would prevail. the contract tells you that it's hard to move him. The presence of Josh Allen, you would think, would put Stephon Diggs at ease as a 30-year-old wide receiver that's a contender. Oh, by the way, he signed a massive four-year extension just 2 years ago. But as we drove back from the aquarium in North Carolina, I got a text from Jim Monas that said, I forget how you worded it. You basically said he's going to get traded. And then it's crazy. I mean, it's time stamped. It was probably, what, 2-3 minutes after that text that Adam Schefter reported he's going to get traded to the Houston Texans. I was surprised, even myself. Were you surprised? I'm guessing not so.
So I'm smiling because not surprised, because nothing can surprise us with this stuff, but it never settled. This, you could have squashed this. There were so many opportunities to squash this whole thing months ago, or combine even. Like, whenever you wanted to squash it, you could have. That's when I think it was hitting me that all of a sudden the Bills are reworking everybody. Reworking. There, you could see this is what you do. We know this. We've talked about this. The cap is real. Doesn't mean you can't get through every season by doing what they're doing. And it was just like, this thing is getting shaky right now, but like, this doesn't, something's not sniffing right. And then I think I heard or read something that Terry Pegula was in town in Buffalo. And I'm like, there's something going down. Like, there's just, it just had that feel. And that's why I said, there's something with Diggs. Didn't know. That was a total guess. It really was, just trying to put things together. Now, the next thing I did tell you, and I want to talk about this because the impact of this has been, it's whatever. We'll get into it. As far as it's been, when I say whatever, I feel like every angle has probably been taken. But the one angle I would like to take is, it reminded me so much of the Shady McCoy trade when we pulled off that trade with Shady, where the difference was obviously the Eagles weren't going to eat the money that Buffalo's eating with Diggs. That's obviously the main, that's where this thing has me completely confused. But the same desire to get rid of a player who is still talented, may not be at his peak. Shady may not have been at the peak at that time, but he certainly was damn good. He came in and we know that rest was right. I'm pretty sure we led the league in rushing. I'd have to go back and check the exact, but he was right in the mix. Diggs can still play, is my point. This is a result of saying, we can't take this guy in the building anymore, period. The Eagles had enough of Shady. Whatever it was, whether it was he was tied to the previous and Chip Kelly had had enough. When you want to get rid of somebody, it is get rid of them. And if the owner signed off on the hit, the $31 million hit, that's a hard swallow, but he's been doing that plenty. And that is a result of Josh Allen. Josh Allen buys you however many mulligans you want as a GM with contracts until otherwise noted. He is a mulligan. It's just nonstop, like just copy and paste. Hey, you want to sign him? It doesn't work. Give it a try next year. We still have Josh. And that's what they're doing. And you know what? To finish, be where I'm at with it. I agree with what Brandon Bean said about let this play out. Let him go to work right now, because I can't tell you the competitor in all of us, why we all played sports as a kid. And why we, even as when we got into the profession, when I was lucky enough to be in the front office and be a part of these drafts, man, this is our Super Bowl, the draft. Like, we have the juices flowing. We want to make trades. We want to go up and get Sammy if we can, if we think that's the all-in decision. So Bean deserves that to, you know, give him a chance and see what's going down. And my last thing to blow your mind, I always have to say one off the, I'm still not going to be shocked at defense is a first round pick. Okay. That's all I'm going to say.
Man, if they go D-line or DB, the local reaction will be fascinating. You know, one difference, though, I like the LeSean McCoy comparison. He wanted to be an Eagle for life. I mean, he's kissing the logo in midfield when you guys played him the next year. And he needed to be talked off the ledge. I mean, as a Bishop McDevitt guy yourself, you were one of the people who spoke to Shady shortly after the trade that, hey, it's not that bad in Buffalo. You'll like, right? And Diggs wanted, he wanted out. He did not want to play for the Buffalo Bills.
The only reason I was comparing it, you're correct. The only really similar thing was where they were at talent wise and where the organizations were as far as they just wanted him out the building. You're correct. Shady was not, it was tough. Like even at the Buffalo, I think it was, oh yeah, it was at the Chop House when he came up with his brother. And, you know, we had when he finally, it was like a week. It felt like it was about a week after the trade, you know, when he actually got up to Buffalo and we met, and it was, everybody was happy, but you could tell it was hurt. I mean, he was definitely hurt by it. That was an ego, and just, he was hurt. So that took time for him, but then, hey, contracts take care of themselves. Shady was pretty happy with the way Buffalo and the Bagulas treated him financially. So at the end of the day, that's what Diggs is. Everybody's going to be happy. Diggs will be happy. Bills will be happy. It's, but the talent level, he's still there. Like, mm-hmm. Diggs is going to produce. Diggs will produce.
I agree. I mean, that's been a source of debate, obviously. I think it's really easy to just sit here and say this is a 30-year-old washed-up receiver that can't produce anymore. Look at what he did when the Bills are going on a 6-game winning streak. Well, I mean, let's look at what he did before the offense kind of changed its philosophy, before this became a power-rushing attack. He was on pace for the best season of his career through 9 games. He would have broken his own record here in Buffalo for the most receiving yards as of it. He can play. Exactly. He can play.
Get everybody needs to get this. He's not a number one out of your head, or because there is no doubt. Like, that is totally up for debate. Who's a number one? Who's not? Is he Justin Jefferson talent wise right now? No. I mean, are there men? There aren't many that are. So point is, whatever you want to say, number one or not, you can win Super Bowls with Diggs as your starting receiver. But Tyler, there's a common theme with Diggs. And we've done a lot with this story because it goes back to where he was drafted at Maryland. We've talked about it. He could not, nobody would sign off on him in the locker room at the University of Maryland. It's why he was drafted where he was drafted. When he left Minnesota, you see the famous interview of every player asked, what is one player you would not let babysit your kid or date your daughter? One of those. One of those just generic questions that's fun, but everybody had the same answer. Diggs. Who was happy to get rid of him out the door? Minnesota. It's just the common, as a scout, it just doesn't change. And what do we always talk about? Production equals tolerance. So he still gets paid. He still gets an opportunity to go compete for a Super Bowl because he deserves that. He works hard. He's tough. And he makes plays. I don't have issues with his talent.
Right. I can't sit here and go hard one direction or the other. I'm not going to say he needed his ass kicked out of town. He's a malcontent. What a disease in this locker room. They're going to be better without. Like, and I can't sit here and say, oh, Diggs was right. How could the Bills do this, trade away? I really truly believe the truth is somewhere in the middle. And yes. All right, let's get to the nitty gritty of this though, Jim. It's a relationship business, like anything in life. Okay, so back in the series, here's what was told to me by an ex-teammate on offense, who insisted that Diggs does not enjoy playing for the head coach. He said, "Quote: I know Diggs, and Diggs wants to be able to do what he wants to do with OTAs and shit like that. Diggs is going to get his work in. The organization I'm at now understands the great players don't need you to babysit them to be great. Diggs wants to be great for Diggs. And when you question that, Diggs gets pissed off because that's testing his integrity and what he wants to be. And I definitely think that's where Sean, earmuffs kids, fucks up." Okay. So that's how one player put it. And this isn't hearsay gossip. It's a piece of the puzzle. And that's what we try to do here, right? Let's show you how players and coaches and scouts behind the curtain see the situation. Okay, this is somebody very involved that sees it day to day. So when this trade is official, I hear from another player that said he heard this thing has been in the works for weeks since the season ended, and that Stephon Diggs had enough of his head coach. Okay. That's not pro Sean, anti Sean, pro Diggs, anti Diggs. That's just the reality of it, is a star player and a head coach not getting along, right? We've seen this before in sports. It's fairly common. Okay. So if you're Sean McDermott, if you're Brandon Bean, if you're the Buffalo Bills, you could say, listen here, dude, we just gave you a 4-year, $100 million extension. You're under contract. Yes, the offense changed, but we've got a whole offseason to figure this out. We'll have OTAs, we'll have mini camp, we'll have training camp. We need you to win a Super Bowl. We want you to be a part of this thing. And if Diggs still was demanding out of town, the Bills could have played hardball. They could have said, okay, let's see. Let's see if you'll really be willing to sit out games, to miss out on those game checks. And if he does take it to that point, I don't think he would, because he's so competitive, because he needs to be out there. But this is where I do kind of get the Bills' point of view. At this point, you've got a younger team now. You've torn up a lot of contracts. You've let go of the Jordan Poyers, the Tre'Davious Whites, Mitch Morse, Tyrell Dodson, Gabe Davis leaves in free agency, Leonard Floyd. And you've lost a lot of players. You're going to be a younger team. You need to hit on the draft. You're going to be counting on the Terrell Bernards and the Christian Bedfords and a lot of younger players, Khalil Shakir, Dalton Kincaid, to become the new nucleus of your team. I get not wanting to risk the malcontent, right? If Diggs made his opinion known that he doesn't want to be a Bill, if you tell him, like hell, you know, you're going to play, what kind of example could that set for the younger players? It could have gotten ugly. Okay, move him, get a pick, eat the money. I get it. And you've got to nail the draft. You've got to draft a wide receiver, maybe two. But we've seen it work. We've seen Green Bay come within a play or two of the NFC Championship game with all first and second year receivers. I saw the Kansas City Chiefs wide receivers stink it up all regular season, and then they win the dang Super Bowl. It all starts with the quarterback. Like you said, as long as you got Josh Allen, your Super Bowl window's wide open. My question, okay, how much blame should the Bills get, though, for getting to this point? Right? Because, you know, hey, this wasn't a shock. This wasn't a surprise. When you trade for Stephon Diggs, you know you are inheriting quite a bit of baggage. You're sitting at that carousel at Buffalo International Airport, and there's a lot of bags that you're picking up when you're picking up Stephon. You know this. He didn't want to play in Minnesota, didn't want to be a part of that offense, and maybe he was absolutely right. So should that head coach that he didn't see eye to eye with have done more to get to know Stephon so it doesn't get to this point? Was it inevitable? Was it an inevitable, like, 4-year shelf life, sick of Buffalo, sick of the playoff losses? And that's another part of it. I mean, he was vocal in the visitors' locker room at Arrowhead, screaming again, it keeps happening. And then you see him in Cincinnati on the sideline in front of Josh. Like, I'm sure that is sprinkled into this as well. Should the Bills have done a better job of trying to just, you know, make Stephon Diggs happy? They gave him a lot of money. I get the argument. Like, hey, you're paying him that much money, you should be happy. But every team has a couple of mercurial personalities like this, and Stephon Diggs has always been one of them.
There's going to be part of the story we will never know, and only a select few people know. Okay, I don't know the depth of what Diggs must have been like in that building behind closed doors, the distraction that he was either causing for the quarterback or the head coach. That's where this is at. And we don't know where the breaking point was, but it had something to do with Josh Allen and McDermott. I don't think Sean moves on from Diggs because he and Diggs don't get along.
Right.
If Diggs is professional and doing things the right way, Sean's going to – production equals tolerance. He's going to tolerate that. This was getting to the quarterback. Something was getting to the quarterback, is my opinion. between Diggs and Allen. I think it's more Diggs Allen than Diggs McDermott.
Now that's interesting, because it wasn't Diggs Cousins in Minnesota. A lot of people thought Kirk Cousins was a source of unhappiness. I really don't think it was. I think it was all Mike Zimmer.
If it was all Sean, that's amazing to me, because then why did you extend him? You already knew everything about him. And that's why I'm just, part of me is thinking, you have to go to the owner to say, you're looking at Terry Pegula and saying, okay, why did you extend him? I mean, you already knew that he was going to be like this. He's going to be unhappy sometimes and happy other days. That part isn't new. So why now? Why does it have to break up? To me, it had to be getting to the quarterback. And if you think something's messing with the quarterback, then you eat $31 million.
Well, let's remember what happened the night before the trade. I mean, this could have been really the final dagger here. So the night before Stephon Diggs is traded to the Texans, he replied to somebody on Twitter who said a top-tier receiver was not, quote-unquote, essential to Josh Allen's success. With two words, Diggs might have just spelled his end in Buffalo. He said, you sure? And it does hint at maybe there is more behind the scenes. Tim Graham of The Athletic had on his podcast, I believe, a scene after the Jets game where they went at it. Allen kind of sniped back at Diggs. I mean, that could have been a couple of guys being competitive. But I'm just saying, you're probably right, Jim. There's a lot that we don't know. Whether it's a reason that Stephon Diggs would be on a Buffalo, or a reason that the Bills would be A-okay shipping him out of town. Look, when you look at the Buffalo Bills all-time single season receiving records, you've got Stephon Diggs at one, Stephon Diggs at two. He's 30 years old. As we said, we believe he can still play. You're a Super Bowl contender because you've got Josh Allen. How long do you have Josh Allen in this form where he is unleashed? To the Bills' credit, Sean McDermott's credit, they unleashed him through that six-game winning streak. They let him run. They went for it on fourth and ones. They were extremely close to beating those Chiefs. And now you've got to find a wide receiver. It just popped in my head, though. I mean, this is probably sprinkled into the decision, too. And on the Bills part of it, on being willing to move on from Stephon Diggs, he did drop what could have been a game-winning bomb from Josh Allen. It went right through his arms. And as Bill Polian said, like a big reason the Colts were finally able to smash through and get over the hump is you judge playoff performance. You put those games under the microscope. I think it's a little overstated. I mean, Diggs hasn't been a total bum in the playoffs. So he's had some good playoff games, but maybe that's in Brandon Bean's mind too. Like, let's try to get better. Let's try to be different in those January games. But man, you do put more pressure on yourself to find another weapon, maybe two weapons. At this point, you're bottom of the barrel in free agency, unless you're going to go blow T. Higgins away. Options are low. I do think they need to draft receivers, though, because you don't know. Look, as long as Josh Allen's the quarterback, we've said it a million times, you're going to contend for Super Bowls. But this version, you never know how long that version will last. So, yes, I think that they absolutely cannot draft a D lineman in the first round.
So what if I told you, I mean, I'm just telling you, I'm not disagreeing with you, obviously, just based on pure numbers right now, the Bills need receivers, like quality NFL receivers or draft picks, whatever. But you don't make this move based on, you do not make it based on, you know, we can go get a receiver in the draft. You don't, because it's still an unknown. You paid Diggs because he is a known factor. You're the one that extended him because you do know what he brings. So that's why, and I'm going to just tell you this too. I believe so much in defense that if there was a player, now I haven't studied the defense like that to even say, but if there was a corner or a pass rusher, playmaking type player on defense that I loved, I can't see how Sean can't consider that. You're having an overhaul on defense, whether you, and we know it. I mean, we know that they have the players that have been here, so it's not a complete new guys, but they're going to have new safety. Like, they have a lot of new pieces on defense too. And this is a time where I think everything's on the table right now for the Bills. I feel like it's wide open. You'll get a receiver. You'll get two if you want them. It doesn't mean it has to be your first pick.
Starter quality from week one, though. I mean, I still think you've got to think through that scope. If you're the, you got Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, Justin Shorter. I mean, you're going to see a lot of two tight end sets, a lot of Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox in terms of dudes who can change a game at any given moment. Those players aren't in any year. They're hard to find. You're picking at 28. 2 years ago, when you needed a corner, you saw the Chiefs leapfrog you for Trent McDuffie. Last year, wide receivers went four picks in a row in front of you, and you move up a pick to make sure you get Dalton Kincaid. I think Brandon Bean's going to be aggressive. I think that in round one, I'm not sure who they like. Is it Xavier Leggett? Is it Brian Thomas?
Those guys are
Mitchell.
I love these. Now, I have watched all these receivers and love them all. Like, all legit. Like, worthy of. But once again, you know, you still are. Your team hasn't changed dramatically by losing Diggs and replacing him with a rookie from South Carolina. Like, I don't necessarily think you just replace good player with good player. So that's that old, you know, hamster wheel effect sometimes. But I think that's why maybe you do get a player on defense you value in the first round. And then you get a player in the second round, a receiver that you value in the second round, and another one in the third round. Now, to me, there you've changed your team, where you got two quality receivers that you believe in to take second, third round, and you just loaded up a guy that you believed in on defense, knowing you're transitioning on defense as well. Just throwing that out there, Tyler. That's just my GM perspective, where I believe so much in quarterback. Once you have the quarterback, I just continue to build defense.
Hey, Green Bay goes Christian Watson, 34, Romeo Doubs, 132, Samori Toure, 258 in 2022. And then they go tight end Luke Musgrave at 42, wide receiver Jaden Reed at 50, tight end Tucker Kraft at 78, wide receiver Dontavian Wicks at 159, and then Grant Dubose at 256. I mean, you can do that too. Like, say there is a defensive player in round one that you know will be able to start right away in your rebuild defense. Triple up, right? You can still draft three more, maybe two of them hit. It's the kind of stuff that, in hindsight, they probably wish they've been doing a little bit more since they've drafted Josh Allen, because to get a receiver on that cost-controlled contract when receivers are able to play right away now more than ever. I just think this group, everything the scouts tell us is it's a special group. I mean, you're seeing it. You're studying these guys. If you're the Bills and you deem one of those players that's going to go in the first, I don't know, 22, 23 picks for sure. If you deem that as a weapon who fits into what you want to do, I think you've got to be aggressive. I don't know what it takes to move up, but and they, who knows, maybe they were kind of thinking packaging Diggs into that kind of trade was in their back pocket as the draft got closer. And then you see that tweet and it's like, okay, all right, we're going to send you to Houston. We're done.
One thing we don't know enough about these receivers is how well they learn the offense. And that's what the scouts, that's what this time of year, that's where you're doing your deep dive with interviews and your X and O's. And if there's a couple of receivers, like I'm not going to ever say a name, but if there are a couple that they have concerns on, like, we might be talking about a group of five receivers, and the Bills might only have two of those guys even available on their board because they wrote three of those guys off because they don't deem them Bills quality, whether it's off the field, learning, work ethic, whatever it is. I'm just throwing that stuff out there. You know what I'm saying? That's how drafts, That's why nothing can surprise you in a draft, because every board is different.
You just bring up such a variable to this entire conversation, is what is a Joe Brady offense? How is it going to change? Because from Brian Daboll to Ken Dorsey, it is extremely complicated. You know, whether it has been Isaiah McKenzie, Quentin Morris, Nyheim Hines, everybody that I've talked to on that side of the ball, they go out of their way to say, wow, this is the most complex offense I've ever been a part of. It's rooted in the old New England Patriots stuff. You know, Daboll was there years ago. So if it's changing under Brady, does that make it easier to pick up? Is it still hard to pick up? That's what we don't know. And
I'm rolling my eyes, people, because this is a podcast and obviously not everybody's watching. I'm rolling my eyes because I can't tell you how, and it goes back to the kind of, I don't want to, the story that I kind of wrote for Go Long this week about Vince Young. And I commented about the nauseating conversations about his Wonderlic score and could he learn the offense?
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how much I am tired of that and how many meetings I've been a part of where yes, I get it. Sometimes you have to quarterback for sure, but come on. So anyway, point being is, it's amazing this time of year how you can talk yourself out of a guy who has another team sees it just fine.
To drive it forward to, I'm with you. Just take the most talented, most athletic, playmaking, explosive weapon. And there is a good chance, whether it's this draft or future drafts, that player is probably going to arrive with some baggage. So whatever happened with Diggs, and I'm sure Sean McDermott knows this, and it seems like this has been a point of his growth. You know, even after our series, you heard him speak about this, players speak about it, including Josh Allen. It's developing authentic relationships with your player. You can't do it 1 through 53. That's why I loved Herm Edwards' quote on just like 3 or 4 guys. Identify those players that have different personalities. As he said, we all kind of know who they are, and try to go out of your way to really get to know that player and sit down, have conversations, go out. Maybe Diggs was a lost cause. As you said, there's probably a lot we don't know. That's going to be important because you have to take chances in the draft. You can't just draft all choir boys and guys that are all going to just get right in line and do what they're told. Newsflash, there's a lot of Diggses out there, and there always has been. Every wide receiver's open. Every wide receiver wants the ball 10, 11, 12 times a game. You've had them. You've drafted them. You've got to take that chance. And they're going to take that chance again. So maybe that's the lesson learned here from the whole dig situation.
There's inconsistencies sometimes with the Bills, what they practice and preach, because Kelvin Benjamin, that signing way back, that he was a known lazy, not love football, not, you know, tough, just potential guy. Now, I know that wasn't some big move or anything, but point being is they've taken chances on guys that they know don't quite meet their, you know, Bill's character. And I'm not saying Diggs obviously meets it. He's a, you know, elite wide receiver, not, like, with his work ethic, everything, and talent. That's why I'm telling you, this has to be so straight. We can't even believe, like, how much he and that quarterback. I'm just going to stick with it. I'm going with he and the quarterback.
It's tough, too, because look at the wide receiver that the Chiefs drafted, Rashee Rice. You know, he's the second round pick. I don't want to misspeak, but right, he has the incident with his Lamborghini hit and run. And he has since taken full responsibility. But if you were to read Bob McGinn's series, and let me just pull it up here. In his draft series last year, and you'll see it this year, very soon, Rashee Rice was the quote-unquote scout's nightmare. And as Bob wrote then, he's got the size, he's got the speed, he's got the athletic ability, and he's got the production to be a high draft choice. But at least one team completely removed Rashee Rice from the draft board because of behavioral issues. Quote, he's talented, but not a good dude, end quote, one personnel director said. So there's, you're going to have to weigh out the pros and cons at wide receiver and cornerback more than any position in football when it comes to stuff off of the field. Maybe you just hit on, I'm sure more teams are going to take the chances on a Diggs if you know he's competitive as hell versus a Kelvin Benjamin if it's known that he's a bit lazy. That's, you're going to gamble more on the competitive worker who cares about winning.
He produced production tolerance. They got rid of Benjamin. Like they didn't mess around. They gave him a shot. They didn't hold on to him. Oh, but I wanted to say, Tyler, you made a good point about, you were talking about, and this is how the whole draft philosophy, and I looked at it, was the 2015 draft in Buffalo with Rex. And it was fun because we didn't have a first round pick. And we had the first, obviously second round was our first pick. And who we debated on, it was Jordan Phillips. And Jordan Phillips, the defensive tackle from Oklahoma? Yeah. And I feel like I said his first name wrong. And Ron Darby. And we took Darby.
You said it right. Yep.
Sorry. For some reason, I was thinking his name was. All right. Point being was they were two. It was a monster D tackle was a rare physical guy. And Darby was a rare physical talent. Both of them fell in the second round for other reasons. Darby's number one reason was he couldn't catch the ball. But that being said, Darby won a Super Bowl and is still playing in the NFL. Like that, and Phillips too. Phillips has been bouncing around and productive everywhere he goes. Point being is that's how you draft. Like I like how we did that draft. We identified two guys in the second round and we debated on them. Rex was good either way. Rex was like, I remember how happy he was. He's like, give me either one of them. Like that was fun dealing with those types of, and we're in the second round doing that. That's when you feel good. Like, hey, we've done a good job as a personnel staff and a scouting staff and a coaching staff as coming together and identifying the right guy. But that being said, Darby did not fit Sean McDermott's defense. So that's why I'm saying every board is different.
Well said. Good opportunity to plug Bob's series too. It's a great time to upgrade to a paid subscription for those who hang out on the free list or just listen to the podcast. All 9 parts will be exclusive to our paid subscribers. It is unbelievably exhaustive. Bob has been talking to scouts and personnel execs from around the NFL. So that will be starting up very soon. Nothing like it. Admittedly biased. I've worked with Bob for a long, long time. The guy is unlike anybody else when it comes to this NFL draft. So make sure you check that out because, yeah, you'll find out stuff like that on Rashee Rice, man. And he had production, right? I mean, there it is. You saw the production. He helped you win a Super Bowl. Now you're dealing with this hit and run ordeal in the offseason.
It's why you have scouts, Tyler. It really is. Like, you can look this name up anytime you want and look at the history of this player, but Junior Gallette, who was a defensive end that we signed in New Orleans, undrafted, that we loved. I had a third round grade on him, like rare Stillman College. Nuts, off his rocker, nuts. Love him. But look at his history after the NFL. Like you can do this another time, but just point being is there's some demons they're dealing with and you just –
I mean, it's
scouts. My point is scouts do an amazing job of finding things about these guys that just help you as an organization feel safe making these decisions.
It's a profession unlike any other. You're strapping on armor and smashing into other human beings 3 hours on a Sunday, even though the NFL is trying to change that, and make it as soft as possible. But yes, there is nothing like, so when you consider that you're going to get human beings with a few screws loose and you've got to take a chance or two. I want to drive this forward though, Jim. Let's talk about the state of the Buffalo Bills 2024, because after this trade, I think a big takeaway nationally, it seemed, is all right, that's it for Buffalo. Let's write the obituary on this era. They got to one conference championship game with Stephon Diggs, got smoked. Now he's gone. So is Jordan Poyer. So is Mitch Morse, Tre'Davious White. I think we're probably in agreement. Critical as I've been, I think there's absolutely a lane here for the Buffalo Bills to contend this year for a Super Bowl, post Diggs, post all those players. If you don't evolve, you die. They are making a very aggressive attempt here to evolve in many different ways. I want to see how the offense looks under Brady. I want to see how the defense looks under Babich. If Sean McDermott does kind of take more of that CEO approach over the whole operation, I think it's smart to go younger at coordinator and smart to go younger with your personnel. And you still have the quarterback. It starts there and maximizing him, as we said, in a league that wants shootouts, that wants offense. The hard work's done when you've got the quarterback. I don't know, Jim. I get the talking point where people are coming from, and that's why they play the games. I mean, maybe the Bills go out there and they go 8-9, and Aaron Rodgers has comeback player of the year, or the Miami Dolphins light defense is on fire in the division, or hey, maybe CJ Stroud and the Texans get to the Super Bowl. I mean, there are so many teams and so many situations you can look at. I still think the Bills are going to be right there. And this is a unbelievably important draft for Brandon Bean. But if they nail this draft, they can absolutely stay right there with Kansas City, Houston, Cincinnati. Am I crazy?
Well, you're crazy because you drove with your kids all over the country. That's why you're crazy. But yes. No, you're not crazy on the Bills are fine. Look, they have veteran safeties. They already have basically veteran safeties to replace veteran safeties. They do it. That is a comfort level that for coaches, that is just like for Sean as the defensive head coach to have his safeties be veterans and not rookies right now, that you can sleep at night a little bit better. I still think looking at their corners, Rasul Douglas and Benford, I mean, we know what they are. I still think a young corner is in the play for them. But I love Teron Johnson. He's outstanding nickel corner. But defensive line, linebackers, you've got your star coming off an injury, Milano, who's not that big to begin with. Bernard's not that big. They like their linebackers small. But, you know, why isn't that not in play? Linebackers, defensive end, that's a pass rusher. I just think everything's in play for the Bills. To your point, the Jets are officially, you want to be the best in your division. That's number one. The Bills obviously have been. The division's been down the last couple seasons. We know that. We've laughed about it almost. Not anymore. You know you have top-tier offense in your division in Miami. The Jets are going to be real. Let's face it. This team is going to be good if he's healthy. As much as it's killing you. I don't want to say his name right now.
Oh, we've always been a pro Rodgers podcast.
But they're going to be legit. That team, that roster has, I mean, it has star power. Now, I don't know if Hackett can be the equalizer and bring the Jets to, but McDermott, I feel like Sean will always outcoach Hackett and on those games. But point being is your division is real. Like you're going to be battling.
All right. Well, here.
Yeah. So anyway, Tyler, the AFC is loaded. It's loaded. Like we've talked about every single time. So nothing's changed.
I think that those 2006 Colts are just such a great team to look at closely because like these Bills, they ran into Tom Brady and the New England Patriots year to year, couldn't get past this team, couldn't get over the hump, had to evolve. You know, I get it. The comp isn't perfect, but it is really similar. I mean, even that Colts team, they had their own 13 seconds kind of loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers where I believe it's Gary Brackett forces a fumble at the goal line and Jerome Bettis. And off Tyler to the races, Bettis. The Colts go. And Ben Roethlisberger finds a way to tackle Nick Harper, backpedaling, stumbling and bumbling. And then Mike Vanderjack misses the kick. I mean, when you look at those 06 Colts, their defense was the worst against the run that year. They get absolutely embarrassed by the Jacksonville Jaguars late in the season. I mean, this is, on the heels of being the worst run defense in the NFL, on the heels of Tony Dungy, right? Not exactly Rex Ryan, calling your defense soft in the press. And then on the heels of that week of practice, I looked up, like, they were working on tackling fundamentals. This is December of 2006. So late in the season.
So
go back and watch that game on YouTube. It is about as bad as it gets. You give up 375 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns to Fred Taylor, Maurice Jones-Drew. Who was the other one? Something Pierman, Alvin Pierman.
That's not missing tackles. That's just whipping. Like, you get whipped.
Yes, it was a public blogging, tar and feather stuff late in the season, right? So, and this is 2006. So we're still conditioned to think run the ball, stop the run, playoff football. The Patriots had won 3 Super Bowls. Of course, the Colts are going to run into them again, and they're going to lose. What happens though? All of a sudden, I mean, they get Bob Sanders back. That helped. And they faced Larry Johnson, who had more rushing yards than anybody in the NFL. Those 2 seasons, they shut him down. They shut Jamal Lewis down. The offense comes alive against the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. They find a way. That belief they believed was in them all along. They find a long-winded way of saying, I get it. We can sit here and pick apart the defense and say, you know, can Rasul Douglas really cover number ones on the boundary? Or is he a zone corner? Does he need to be in the slot? I don't know, man. After the NFL just banned this hip drop non-tackling, and it's you've brought it up. We know that the NFL doesn't care about defense. If they could, they'd put flags in everybody. You've got Josh Allen, load up on offense. And hey, on defense, try to get some stops. Try to force a turnover. I mean, this isn't really a defense that has been stopping anybody in the playoffs. I think the last 4 playoff losses, they've forced 1 turnover. They've given up 16 touchdowns, 8 field goals on 32 non-kneel down drive. It's in elimination games. So we've seen this defense let down at worst possible time. Like, philosophically, just operate through your quarterback, through your offense, play that way, get what you can out of your defense. I don't know. I wouldn't overthink it on that side of the ball.
Best player available in the draft. Okay. The most boring cliche.
Get out of here. You're kicked off the podcast for saying that.
I feel bad saying it. It's almost like I feel like we're doing a mock. You know what's funny? I almost feel like the draft has already happened. Like, it may be time to move this thing up a little bit.
It's not what the league wants. It's all.
No, you're right. That's a good point.
Right, because the schedule will be released. That's going to give everybody content to predict all of the games.
They're adding games. No, they're adding games as we
see. Yes, the league does care about player safety, adding games. Yes, they absolutely do. Final word on Stephon Diggs. I really still think Isaiah McKenzie. And by the way, I got this on Twitter. McKenzie is not the player who told me that Diggs was done with Sean. I know everybody loves to play that guessing game. It wasn't Isaiah McKenzie. For those who actually read it, Isaiah McKenzie had so many great things to say about his head coach. They had a good relationship. And he's always been open and on the record, especially when it comes to Stephon Diggs. Here's what he said on a happy hour this time last year. I thought he just put it perfect. Quote, he's a free bird. You just have to let him talk. Let him ramble. It's Steph. I will say this. With Steph, I respect Steph. You've got to respect Steph, because when he steps between those lines, it's not like he's not doing his job. He's doing his job. And whatever he's saying, that's what he's doing. But when it comes to tweets or him talking or him yelling at Josh, a coach, whatever it may be, it's just Steph trying to get it out. He's just getting it out. My fiance told me this. She said, sometimes I just want you to listen. I'm just talking. I don't want you to say anything. That's how you have to treat Steph. And then he estimated that Diggs is right 90% of the time, you know, when he's going on one of his tantrums, his tirades, and that other 10% of the time when he's quote unquote tripping, that's when Isaiah McKenzie would step in. That's when a veteran teammate steps in. That's when they say, Yo, Steph, you're being hypocritical. You can't say this when you just did that. So this team's been changing the last few years. You know, guys like Isaiah McKenzie not around anymore. So maybe that player who would kind of keep him in check isn't around for whatever we don't know is going on behind the scenes. We know that "you sure" tweet is probably fitting into that 10% of Stephon Diggs being out of line. I think that's Stephon Diggs in a nutshell, right? Like, you know what you're going to get. There's no secrets. You find a way to work with it, to deal with it, to make this work. And it just got to a breaking point, right? It just got to the point where both sides needed to sign those divorce papers and call it quits. So here the Bills are. And I think all these truths can live in the same universe. Yes, the Bills maybe could have done something different to somehow make this relationship behind the scenes work. However, it went sour. And yes, the Buffalo Bills are still a Super Bowl contender because they can evolve. They can change. They still have Josh Allen. And what was the third one? Oh, yeah, they've got to nail this draft. Brandon Bean's next move is about as big as it gets since he drafted Josh Allen over Josh Rosen. Any final thoughts, Jim?
No, I like how you summed that up. It's always a drafts are always important, though.
They are. And you're talking cornerback and D-line.
No, I'm saying everything should be on the table. I don't think you can eliminate positions.
It's Jim ground and pound Monus. Jim win with defense Monus.
If you have a quarterback, you better make sure you take the best player.
Jim, best player available Monus.
It's so boring. I hate that I am that cliche, but I am with that.
I think it aligns. So I think the best player can be a wide receiver, especially if you do everything you can to move up to acquire that wide receiver. Okay. Hey, here's the final question, though. So they have the second round pick, the extra second round pick next year out of this trade. Whoop, it looks like I just lost you. You still there, Jim?
I am. You froze on me too. So
okay. Hey, that's so how does the trade chart work? Like if they were going to use that Diggs pick, that second rounder in 2025, would that, how far up the draft board would that get you in the first round?
Oh,
it's a future pick.
Yeah, no, it's,
it doesn't.
I forget, you know, Tyler, I would love to see how that chart has changed. I'm going on that. I bet it has changed a little bit. Yeah. I'm sure it has. It stayed pretty true for a long time, but I feel like I will say I've been out of it too long to comment on that chart. It had to have changed a little bit. But point being, I don't think it's like some, no, it doesn't, off the top of my head, that doesn't sound like that should move it like that.
Back to the NFL draft. We'll take this podcast this week when we connect. So stay tuned for that. For Bob McGinn's series, I'll have some profiles on prospects as well. A lot cooking here at Go Long. So thank you, everybody, for listening, for watching. We greatly appreciate you.